Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, Diana, here with you every Saturday, bringing you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. Starting with the latest headlines, this one reads, U.S. military begins clearing Strait of Hormuz, Trump says. U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday posted on social media that the United States military has started to clear the Strait of Hormuz, and that all of Iran's mine-laying ships have been sunk, saying, quote, "We're now starting the process of clearing out the Strait of Hormuz." He wrote this in a Truth Social post, adding, "All 28 of Iran's mine-dropper boats are also lying at the bottom of the sea." Minutes before Trump's post, reports started to emerge about the presence of U.S. Navy ships in the strait. An Axios journalist citing an unnamed U.S. official posted that several U.S. ships had crossed the strait on Saturday, though Iranian state TV soon after reported a denial from an official with Iran's military. Trump has repeatedly said that American forces have destroyed Iran's Navy and Air Force while crippling its ballistic missile and nuclear programs. But fear of Iranian attacks on shipping over the past several weeks has effectively closed the Strait of Hormuz, a critical conduit for global oil supplies. Throttling the strait has disrupted global energy markets. U.S. gasoline prices have spiked even though most of the oil that flows through the waterway does not go to the United States. Representative from the U.S. and Iran began talks hosted by Pakistan in Islamabad on Saturday amid a fragile ceasefire in the conflict. Meanwhile, in other news, the Pentagon and FAA sign agreement on deploying anti-drone laser system near Mexico. The Federal Aviation Administration and Pentagon said on Friday they had signed an agreement allowing the government's use of a high-energy laser counter-drone system along the southern U.S. border with Mexico. The agreement came after the FAA conducted testing in New Mexico on the laser system used by the Pentagon and Homeland Security Department and validated that proper safety controls are in place and do not pose undue risks to passenger aircraft. Two earlier incidents posed serious concerns. The U.S. military errantly shot down a government drone with the laser-based system on February 25th, leading the FAA to expand an area in which flights are barred around Fort Hancock, Texas. The incident followed the February 18th decision by the FAA to halt all flights for 10 days at the nearby El Paso airport because of the use of the Pentagon laser system by a Homeland Security agency without completion of an FAA safety review. The El Paso shutdown order was lifted by the FAA after about 8 hours following the White House's intervention. Following a thorough, data-informed safety risk assessment, we determined that these systems do not present an increased risk to the flying public, FAA Administrator Brian Bedford said on Friday. The Pentagon has said there are more than 1,000 drone incursions along the U.S.-Mexico border each month. U.S. security officials have increasingly expressed alarm about the use of drones by Mexican cartels to drop drug packages or surveil trafficking routes. Several media outlets reported last month drones were seen over Fort McNair in Washington, where Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth live. There is no indication the Pentagon plans to deploy the laser at the base, which is close to Reagan Washington National Airport. Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth last month called on federal watchdogs to review the decision-making process, leading to the use of the systems and the FAA's decision to close airspace. That's all for that article. In other news, Trump's VA budget request tops $488 billion for fiscal year 2027. The Department of Veterans Affairs would see its budget increase by 7.7% in fiscal year 2027 under the White House's proposed $2.2 trillion budget for the federal government. According to budget documents released this week by the Trump administration, the VA would receive a record $488 billion, including $205.6 billion in discretionary funding for programs and operations and $282.6 billion for mandatory spending, the column that covers disability benefits, pensions, insurance, and other requirements. Highlights in the discretionary spending proposal include $500 million to build permanent facilities for homeless veterans at the new National Center for Warrior Independence in West Los Angeles, $1.3 billion to construct a VA medical center in Manchester, New Hampshire, nearly $2 billion to replace the VA Medical Center in Indianapolis, and $30 million to buy land for a new medical center in San Antonio. The budget supports the VA's proposed redesign of its community care contracts and programs and planned changes to the management structure at the Veterans Health Administration. It also funds the restart of the VA's electronic medical record system program that has been on hold since 2022. The VA plans to restart the initiative this month at 4 facilities, with an additional 9 joining later this year. The VA estimates that the fiscal 2027 budget would provide disability compensation to more than 7.4 million veterans and support 9.2 million veterans enrolled in VA healthcare. According to the VA's budget in brief documents, the proposal would support 443,327 full-time VA employees, roughly 9,000 fewer than in 2025, but up nearly 6,200 from fiscal year 2026. In a statement laid out in the documents, VA Secretary Doug Collins said the proposal will enable the department to deliver timely care and benefits for all beneficiaries. This budget request reflects VA's efforts to find more effective and efficient ways to serve our mission and maximize our resources, the document states. The days of measuring VA's progress by how much money we spend and how many people we employ, instead of how successfully we serve veterans, are over. President Donald Trump's $2.2 trillion budget proposal for fiscal 2027 includes nearly $1.5 trillion in spending for the Defense Department, up 44% from fiscal 2026 levels, and increases for the Department of Justice and Homeland Security. It trims several domestic programs, including education, food and energy assistance, housing, the National Institutes of Health and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, among others. The proposed VA budget increases spending for VA medical care provided in VA facilities, but also increases the budget for community care, the VA's program for covering the health treatment received by veterans in non-VA facilities. The budget, which also includes a request for advanced funding for fiscal 2028, ensures that veterans' benefits and services are never affected by a government shutdown. In addition, it increases medical care funding, with $96.2 billion requested for care provided in the VA medical system and $42 billion for community care. As with fiscal 2026, VA officials asked to shift the mandatory funds designated to cover the costs associated with injuries or illnesses related to toxic exposures to the discretionary budget. The request of $52 billion from the Cost of War Toxic Exposures Fund is likely to raise concerns among Democratic lawmakers who have argued that the continued use of the funds could jeopardize monies set aside for a specific purpose. The proposal also seeks to cut what White House officials refer to as divisive and wasteful diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. The budget documents did not specify which diversity programs the budget will defund, but officials said the reductions would ensure that VA funding is used for critical VA missions, providing health care benefits and cemetery services for America's veterans. The president's proposed budget represents Trump's vision for the federal government. It serves as a blueprint for Congress to consider as it starts its fiscal 2027 appropriations process. In the last 25 years, the VA's budget has ballooned significantly to address the need of older veterans, as well as the millions who served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere following the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. Trump's fiscal 2027 budget proposal represents a tenfold increase for the VA since fiscal 2001, when the VA's budget was $45 billion. All right, and speaking of that new VA electronic medical record system, after 3-year hiatus, VA to resume rollout of new electronic medical record system. 4 Veterans Affairs health systems in Michigan will activate the department's new electronic health record system on Saturday, ending a 3-year pause to a program that has been plagued by delays and cost overruns. The VA Detroit Healthcare System, VA Saginaw Healthcare System, VA Ann Arbor and Battle Creek Healthcare Systems will flip the switch from the VA's legacy digital medical record to the new federal electronic health record currently used by 6 sites across the VA. The department's adoption of the Oracle Health's FEHR was halted in 2023 following a year-long pause over safety and functionality concerns. The program, which was introduced to medical centers in Washington, Oregon, and Ohio between 2020 and 2022, experienced numerous setbacks, including incidences of harm to at least 149 patients, according to the VA Inspector General. The safety programs were tied to a system feature that caused some specialty care referrals, follow-on appointments, and lab orders to disappear from view. VA officials announced in late 2024 that they planned to restart the project in Michigan in 2026 and in March of 2025, announced they would accelerate adoption by adding 9 more sites this year. Deputy Secretary Paul Lawrence said during an event Friday at the John D. Dingell VA Medical Center in Detroit that the VA expects to roll out the system to 26 additional sites next year. But already folks in the VA system are knowing how well this is going to go. They're asking to be moved up, Lawrence said, according to the Detroit News. Joining Lawrence at the Detroit event marking the Go Live, VA Secretary Doug Collins said the department's inspector general would monitor the system to ensure it was functioning, saying, "Our IG office is a wonderful group that helps us do better in what we do," according to the Detroit News. The VA selected the system made by Cerner in 2017 after it was chosen by the Department of Defense for the Military Health System patients. The VA system originally was expected to take 10 years to adopt and cost $10 billion. That estimate was soon revised to $16 billion and now stands at $37.2 billion across the program's life cycle, according to Lawrence. During the pause, the VA and Defense Department worked jointly to adopt the system at the James Lovell Federal Healthcare Center in North Chicago. Between the lessons learned during that rollout and revisions, VA officials have seen vast improvements in performance where it is used, according to Lawrence. The deputy secretary wrote in a blog post in March that Oracle Health had improved system performance, reliability, and usability, running it without any outages 87% of the time between June 2023 and December 2025. The system also attained incident-free time for nearly 2 years from March 2024 to December 2025, Lawrence wrote. The federal EHR is now reliably available to end users without system-wide outages. We have reduced disruptions, prevented lost productivity, and ensured critical workflows continue without delay, Lawrence said. Over the last several weeks, the Michigan facilities told patients to expect fewer available appointments and anticipate pharmacy delays in the ramp-up to the switchover. In a message posted on the VA Detroit Medical Center X social media page, officials told veterans they also may see different prescription numbers on medications until they refill their prescriptions in the new system, and could expect to see trainers helping staff learn the system. What is not changing is the same high-quality healthcare you have come to expect at Detroit VA Healthcare System, they wrote on X. Republicans and Democrats in Congress have told VA officials they are watching the restart closely and still have concerns about the system's potential impact on veterans' medical care and employee burnout. Representative Tom Barrett, Republican of Michigan, chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Technology Modernization Subcommittee, said in a hearing in December that VA physicians and pharmacists continue to have concerns over reliability and safety backstops. "The only acceptable result is a flawless go-live because our veterans cannot accept failure," Barrett said. Representative Nikki Budzinski, Democrat of Illinois, said she was concerned that the VA had not completed all recommendations from the Government Accountability Office. The GAO had made several recommendations on improving and implementing the system, and the VA had not fulfilled them. "We need to have the difficult conversations to make sure that both Oracle and VA are accountable to Congress, to VA employees, and most importantly, to veterans," Budzinski said. Dr. Neil Evans, acting program executive director, said the VA is ready to roll. Evans said in the hearing, "VA remains committed to successfully implementing a modern, interoperable electronic health record system, which we refer to as the Federal EHR, and we intend to implement that across the entire VA enterprise. As was mentioned, since our last hearing in February, the VA has made significant progress towards meeting that goal." All right, that's all for news concerning the VA. Up next, now here's some news concerning some things I've been hearing in conversation. Automatic registration for U.S. military draft-eligible men to begin in December. Automatic registration into the U.S. military draft pool for eligible men is slated to begin in December, following efforts from lawmakers and the Selective Service Agency to streamline the previous self-registration process. The Selective Service System, the federal agency that maintains a database of registered U.S. males who are considered draft eligible in the event of a national emergency, submitted a proposed rule to the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs on March 30th, according to the office's dashboard. Automatic registration into Selective Service was mandated in December of 2025 when President Donald Trump signed into law the fiscal year 2026 National Defense Authorization Act, the agency's website says. This statutory change transfers responsibility for registration from individual men to the SSS through integration with federal data sources, the website reads. Putting the effort in motion by this December is a move to simplify the registration process and the equivalent workforce realignment, according to the website. The proposed rule is currently under review by the Regulatory Affairs Office, awaiting finalization per the dashboard. The SSS coordinated with Congress throughout the 2026 NDAA process, the agency's website says. In May 2024, lawmakers worked to incorporate language about the automatic registration into the annual defense authorization bill, citing money and legal challenges. The SSS costs around $30 million a year. This will allow us to rededicate resources, basically that means money, towards readiness and towards mobilization, rather than towards education and advertising campaigns driven to register people, Representative Chrissy Houlihan, Democrat of Pennsylvania, who sponsored the language, said at the time. Currently, almost all male U.S. citizens and immigrants aged 18 through 25 are required to self-register within 30 days of their 18th birthday, with late registration available until an individual turns 26. Men who fail to register are considered to be in violation of the Military Selective Service Act, and can face penalties such as ineligibility for federal programs, a fine up to $250,000, or 5 years imprisonment. Registration for the draft has dwindled in recent years, partly because the option to register was removed from federal student loan forms in 2022, which accounted for nearly a quarter of all previous registrations. Meanwhile, after some attempts from lawmakers, women are still exempt from registration. The SSS was established in 1917 by President Woodrow Wilson after the U.S. entered World War I. President Gerald Ford suspended the draft in 1975, but it was reinstated just 5 years later in 1980 by President Jimmy Carter when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. The U.S. has not activated the draft since 1973 during the Vietnam War and has relied on volunteers ever since. All right, now let's shift gears a little bit to military history. All Quiet on the Western Front finds a new voice. Published in January 1929, All Quiet on the Western Front sold 1 million copies in Germany in its first year and 2 million around the world. Just a little over a decade after World War I ended, Erich Maria Remarque's readers found themselves behind the German front lines, empathizing with German soldiers who had once been mortal enemies to the Americans, British, and the French. Like the outcropping of surrealism after World War I, All Quiet on the Western Front opened up a new genre of books for veterans to process what they had gone through. The novel attracted global audiences in its own time, and continues to do so nearly a century later, because it lays bare features identifiable in virtually any war: deprivation, terror, trauma, kinship, black humor, alienation from society, and usually some questioning of the cause. Samantha Power, Pulitzer Prize-winning author and former U.S. ambassador to the UN, writes in the foreword of the book's most recent translation. However, while it is one of the most famous books to come out of World War I, or any war for that matter, All Quiet on the Western Front, until recently, had only been translated twice from German to English. Once in 1929 by an Australian, the second translation from 1993 is available only in the United Kingdom. Arthur Wesley Ween's 1929 edition, despite its numerous mistranslations and stylistic flaws, is the dominant one today, having been the only one available in the U.S. for almost 100 years. Maria Tatar, the John L. Loeb Professor of Germanic Languages and Literatures and Folklore and Mythology, Emerita, saw a gap in the literature and painstakingly restored the novel with contemporary prose while remaining faithful to Remarque's voice. With All Quiet on the Western Front now in the public domain, she writes in her foreword, we have the opportunity to try to convey its power in a new translation and to introduce it to a new generation. I think my real mission was to bring back the voice of the protagonist, Paul Baumer, to let him speak, Tatar told Military Times. In a way, this is a talking book. I'd like to think of it as a book that speaks to us, that gives somebody who is muted by the war, really, a voice. We get to process the violence of war through Paul, Tatar continued. And the interesting thing is that, of course, war is the world-shattering experience. Not just world-shattering, but also word-shattering. So there's a strange paradox embedded in the book. We're getting these sorts of unmediated thoughts of the soldier as he's experiencing combat. I really did see my mission as trying to capture the register of Baumer's voice in English, which is, I have to say, not as easy as I thought it would be. Calling the translation a labor of love and a struggle, Tatar strove to bring back, or rather preserve, the Germanness of All Quiet on the Western Front. Translation means carrying over, carrying across, said Tatar, and I feel as I was translating that I was rowing across the River Styx, bringing back a dead man, giving him a voice and channeling Remarque as well. Wien's 1929 translation has become the definitive translation of Remarque's work, but according to Tatar, Wien himself admitted that his German was not very good. The manuscript was sent to me, Wien later reported, as being one able to understand it, and on reading I found that I understood it less by reason of my knowledge of German, which I have but imperfectly than by virtue of having made the experience recorded in it. In some instances, Wien includes the word mate in his translation, something no German on the Western Front would conceivably call his fellow soldiers. In another, Remarque writes about a guy getting lucky, which translates into English literally as he had a pig. According to Tatar, Wien subsequently took that to mean the soldier had pork for dinner. While Brian Murdoch's 1993 version comes closer to a true rendering of All Quiet, Tatar notes that there were places where I felt uncomfortable, where the dialogue is so difficult to capture in the right way, to get the right tone. And although Murdoch is successful in many ways, that's where I think he fell short, in not working hard enough to get the dialogue close to something like a Hemingway style. Remarque's All Quiet on the Western Front serves as a semi-autobiographical account of the author's war. Conscripted in the German army in 1917 at the age of 18, Remarque was hit by shrapnel in the leg, arm, and neck, and sent to a hospital to convalesce while returning once again to the front. Remarque's unvarnished account of the war is evident in All Quiet. It is written from the heart, not from the head, Tatar noted. Tim O'Brien describes in The Things They Carried, The Majesty of Combat, said Tatar, I think he calls it the aesthetic purity of absolute moral indifference. But what I find in Remarque's work is more of a grotesque aesthetic. It's not the majesty of combat. You get this fragmentation, destructive violence, disintegration, dissolution, and yet in the face of all of that, there's a subtext that endorses effective engagement, emotional engagement, sympathetic identification, almost as if to compensate for the unspeakable physical injuries of war. So in the midst of all this violence, we're seeing what Paul sees. We're feeling what he feels. You feel his pain in an extraordinary way. As I was translating the novel, I was so often on the edge of tears, Tatar continued, and part of it is that Remarque is so skillful as a narrator in drawing you into combat. First, you get all these acoustical effects, the roar of cannon, the explosions, and then he gives you all these sensory visual details. You're really drawn into this explosive, terrifying scene of time. The novel has endured for almost a century because while the tools for killing have evolved, much of warfare remains the same. There are and will always be soldiers seeking solace in the camaraderie of their peers and wondering what the hell it achieves to kill and be killed for causes defined by others, Powers writes. It also details the painful, deep disconnect of soldiers returning home from war. "There are people I don't understand," Paul reflects, "and I both envy and loathe them." Human nature almost ensures that there will be more generations who empathize with Paul, but Tatar hopes that her translation has found the words for a story that we must keep reading to keep from repeating it. I can't wait to check that book out. Well, I thought I would read a funny story or two. Hopefully this gives you a chuckle. Sailor reportedly finds dead rat in finished energy drink. A sailor indulging in the time-honored military tradition of energy drink guzzling was reportedly greeted with a rude surprise this week when, after polishing off a monster, he discovered the decomposing corpse of a rat at the bottom of the can, attempting to achieve energy levels considered necessary to unleash the beast. John Witt, 29, instead discovered an actual rotting beast after finishing the drink, according to the local CBS affiliate, WTKR News. Witt, who said he purchased a pack of the drinks from a 7-Eleven in Norfolk, Virginia, promptly vomited several times. "Naturally," he told WTKR, which shared video of the canned corpse. "It's a full-size rat," he said, "and it's a big rat." The sailor first brought the issue to the attention of his chain of command, one member of which responded correctly, "Go to the ER, bro." Witt then checked into Portsmouth Naval Hospital, where he said medical personnel informed him that it was more than likely, with the chemicals that are in Monster, that it should be okay. "Unleash the embalming fluid. My antibodies should be able to fight it off," Witt said, adding that medical staff wanted to closely monitor the situation for the next 48 hours. Witt, a longtime beast unleasher, told WTKR that he has no plans to ever consume another monster, or even closed can beverages for that matter. "I'm never going to be able to drink anything that I can't see again," the new open container advocate told the outlet. Witt intends to file a report with the Food and Drug Administration, according to WTKR. Select reports, meanwhile, suggest Master Splinter, having gotten on in years, may have confused the monster can for mutagen, the chemical colloquially known as ooze. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles could not be reached for comment. And that is all the time we have. Thank you once again for tuning into Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, signing out.